show your bosses don't want you to listen to, the show that's going to tell you the truth whether you want to hear it or not. It's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Here's your host, Joe Vecchio.
Okay, we're back. After a brief intermission from last week, we had some technical issues. That's the sort of thing when you're starting up a radio network. Hi, everybody. I'm Joe Vecchio. I am your humble host, and I am the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. And again, for the people who want to call in, the number is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And you can also go on the Head-On chat room, headonradionetwork.com. Click the little chat room link, and if it doesn't crash your computer, you can chat with all the nice peoples there. And I'm here with Agnes. Hi, Agnes. I hope you're doing well tonight. She may not talk back. That's fine. That's cool. But
hi, Joe.
Hi, Agnes. She's doing a wonderful job keeping up with all this technology. And we have some guests in the studio tonight. I've had them on my show before, and they're back to talk about some things going on with them. Amber Ray and Rusty Tanton of Being Amber Ray and the Georgia Radical Georgia Moderate. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good.
Spectacular.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you in the studio. And we're all naked, by the way.
Well,
maybe not.
Maybe.
True.
You don't know.
Yeah.
You don't. We could be naked. That was a great white north. They did that. My brother and I. We could be naked, eh?
It's possible.
It's possible. So how you got? Now you guys have started the Georgia Podcast Network, which I am proud to be a member of, and it just goes to show that not all Georgians are a bunch of rural redneck hicks.
Yeah, we want to get rid of that stereotype.
Well, it's certainly not true here in Atlanta, anyway. I mean, most of the people I've met in Atlanta are fairly intelligent. They're really, you don't get into the redneck types until you get out to places like Macon and
Augusta
and
my
places
hometown.
Like that. Not Athens. Athens is a college town, although UGA doesn't have the most stellar reputation as far as education is concerned.
You know where I graduated from, don't you?
You graduated from UGA.
That's right. 2 degrees from there, actually, so maybe be careful.
I got to tell you, you want to hear my UGA joke?
You're going to tell it anyway.
I'm going to tell you anyway. This is the other big school here in Georgia is Georgia Tech, which is located here in Atlanta, and there's a huge rivalry between UGA and Tech, and my joke is always, and you're not going to like it. I told it to Donald Thiem, who was another UGA graduate, and he thought it was funny, but that's done. But basically, the Tech alum and the Georgia alum meet after a big football game where Georgia just routed Georgia Tech, beat the crap out of them all up and down the field, which is what usually happens from what I understand. Although, actually, I think it's usually a pretty close game. But this particular case, it was just a rout. You know, just got the crap beat out of them up and down the field. And the Georgia guy was just ragging on the Tech guy up and down. Oh, yeah, you got you. And finally, the Tech guy says, I'm very happy for you. Can I have my fries now, please?
Yeah, well.
I'm sorry.
I'm sure Rusty enjoyed that joke.
Is Rusty a Tech grad?
Well, my parents, my mom actually went to Georgia Tech, and my grandfather played football for Georgia Tech, so.
Your grandfather played football for Tech,
really?
Yeah, he
did. He was a tailback. He was a big boy, too. He put the hurt on. But, yeah, so I grew up with sort of a dual allegiance, both to Tech, where a lot of my family went, and to University of Tennessee, where I went. So
it's also a big rivalry.
Yeah, so yeah. I kind of hate Georgia twice.
Well, it is funny because, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and we talked about sports all the time mm-hmm. in Brooklyn, but we never talked about college sports. Not that I'm aware. It was always Mets versus Yankees, Jets versus Giants, Knicks versus Nets. Everything we talked about was pro sports. And I used to think that, you know, Southerners were stupid because all they talked about was college sports. But then I realized that for the most part, you guys haven't had pro sports until just recently.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, what's up in New York? Rutgers, Syracuse.
Well, these are not big.
These are not like power football schools,
right?
Like
well,
what you have down
they're
here.
Academic schools. Yeah. You know, they're academic schools. Although Tech is a very academic school, still one of the best mm-hmm. engineering schools in the country.
I got the University of Georgia is a very academic school.
Yes. Yeah, but tell the truth. Would UGA exist if it didn't have a football team? Would it still be there?
I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, it would, actually.
Well, actually, from what I understand, from the people who have lived here for a long time, they say that Georgia is actually a much better school than people give it credit
for. Since the scholarship, actually, it's become very difficult to get into.
Well, and I can tell you because I started my first three semesters of college. I went to NYU, which obviously has this prestigious reputation as a, you know, great academic school. And it was. It was a great school. I had a great time there, but it got too expensive. And I realized when I realized I could come back to Georgia and basically go to school for free on the Hope Scholarship, it was no contest. And then when I got there, I realized I was getting the same quality education, paying for a name. Not that I'm ragging on NYU, but unless you go there for like business or theater or something like that, you're not really getting the full benefit of the school.
Well, from what I understand, UGA has a pretty decent law program.
Yeah, as far as I know.
So, well, let's talk about the Georgia Podcast Network and tell me about the thought process that went behind starting it.
Rusty, why don't you tackle that first?
Well, actually, Joe, this idea kind of started in part after we came on your show. We had a lot of our friends tell us that we should start a podcast. And I thought to myself, well, you know, it'd be nice to start a podcast, but it'd be even nicer to start a podcast network. Mm-hmm. Where, because, I mean, I like it. I enjoy podcasting, but more so I wanted to, you know, we wanted to get our friends involved with this. And so that's how the idea kind of started. And, you know, then I shot that at Amber, and Amber put in a whole bunch of ideas, and we just kind of went back and forth with it and into what it is now.
Well, I'm glad I influenced you in some way. It shows that I'm actually accomplishing something here. I'm not
yeah,
just,
you were the catalyst.
So, well, you guys, you know, I got a lot of compliments from you. I don't know if I emailed you about that or not, but I got a lot of compliments about having you guys on the show because you got great voices and you work well together. And it's always nice to have an online couple that's actually a couple. You know, because a lot of the impressions of computer geeks is that you can't get girls and
right.
You know blah blah blah. Let's talk a little bit about this because the main reason I want to have you on is because I wanted to talk about relationships and sex and Republicans and Democrats and how everybody looks at things in a different way. But there was something that I brought up a couple of weeks ago that really kind of sickened me, and it was these little purity deals that the Republicans have going on.
The
purity balls where they have, and that's really kind of a sick term for it, too.
I mean,
yeah, let's have
so
a purity
jokes
ball.
That are ready yeah. to be made right there.
Ready-made joke.
But basically what it is, and for those of you who didn't catch the show that week, it's they have, and these girls, we're talking about 6 or 7-year-old girls now, who probably know nothing about sexuality in any way, shape, or form. They go out and they have a big tie and tuxedo and evening gown type of thing, and they get out there and get to be with daddy and dance with daddy and all that stuff, and they swear an oath that's essentially, I will remain pure and sexually pure until the day that I give myself as a gift to my husband.
Give myself as a wedding gift to my husband. That's the part that really skeeves me out, that really just gives me the willies when I hear that part.
It's all a big property thing. And from what I've seen about the way the Republicans are about abortion and birth control, they're not really concerned so much about the unborn child as they are about just putting their little fingers in and getting some control over people. They're really, a lot of them are just really against recreational sex.
Well, it's all about control. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else to say because that's what it's all about. I mean, they can talk about the culture of life, but it's sort of like culture of life until you come out of the womb, and then, you know, good luck.
Yeah, good. You know, you're on your own. Good night. The whole thing just kind of sickens me. I mean, I just look at this.
It's pretty gross. They're a little obsessed with sex, you know, but not in a good way.
Not in a good way. And what is the problem with Americans and sex? I mean, we have, okay, on the one hand, you have these purity balls where we're very, repressive, that's the word I'm looking for, concerning that. But on the other hand, you look at all the people making money on this Girls Gone Wild stuff or whatever other little sex videos they have coming on. And when it seems to me that when we are talking about sex, we're very exploitive of it. Can't anybody just be honest about it and just talk? Because you guys have a wonderful relationship. I mean, my wife and I had a wonderful relationship. We had a very sexual relationship in our own way. I mean, we didn't make it, you know, we didn't exactly publicize it. But there was no guilt involved with that, and there's no guilt involved with what you guys do. And while you don't go into details, you do talk about it. So what the hell is wrong with us in this country when it comes to that?
I'd like to know that.
You got to help me out here a little bit, though.
Well, do you want to say anything? I don't want to hog the conversation.
Well, look at Rupert Murdoch, for example. I think there's a real dynamic there between making people afraid of it and then making money off of it. The dude runs, you know, two primary channels. He runs the Fox News channel, mm-hmm. which is you know, sort of caters to all these people who are scared of vaginas, and then there's, you know, his regular Fox TV network, which has, like, The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, or is that ABC? I don't know.
But I don't know. Whatever.
Whatever. It's all that garbage that...
One of them has Wife Swap.
Vapid and exploitative. And
they also have The Simpsons, which is really strange, because The Simpsons really made that network. Yeah. And it's very much counter to what Fox News goes against.
Well, the Fox channel in general is very counter to what Fox News puts out. I mean, you know... they must view it very cynically to be able to do it that way, because there's just, like I said, it's totally contrasting. They contrast with each other.
Well, here's the deal. Now, we were discussing this just before we went on the air, the Porter Goss story. And one of the real reasons that he might have quit as abruptly as he did is that his name was kind of whispered around in this whole Duke Cunningham hookers at the Watergate Hotel type of deal. And it seems to me, and I think this was pretty true in the case, I mean, I can't say for sure, but if you look at, like, Nixon versus Kennedy, Nixon might have been jealous of the fact that Kennedy could get laid damn near any time he wanted by some of the most beautiful women in the world. I mean, you can tell Marilyn Monroe had the hots for John F. Kennedy. Whether or not they actually really did sleep together, I can't say for sure, but you can tell that there was an attraction there. And you can't imagine, you know, a Marilyn Monroe, a really beautiful woman like that, you know, going after Nixon. So here the Republicans having to hire all these hookers just to get laid every now and then, and they have to go through all this. And someone else made the dichotomy with the purity balls, where they're so anti-homosexual that the boys have to go out and, you know, be big football stars and do all these other things to prove their manlyhood, their manliness. And, you know, that makes for a very bad combination. But do you think maybe if we just got more Republicans laid instead of having to buy them hookers, that maybe they wouldn't be quite so uptight?
I don't think I think there's more to it than that. Because, okay, if they get hookers, then they are getting laid. And I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, being a customer of a sex worker.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but I think when... Okay, I'm going to try to phrase this in a way that doesn't make me sound like a total sexist bigot or
Let's
something
hear
like
it.
That. But I think if you've gotten to the point where the only way you can actually have sex with a woman is by paying with it, that you don't really care about relationships and you don't really care about anything above and beyond the raw act of sex, and I can't imagine they do it very well to begin with, then I think that's saying something wrong. Because, you know, I've never had to do, you know, to go to a prostitute, but then again, I didn't get laid until I was something like 40 years old anyway. I mean, Kathy was my first and my only.
Well, I don't know. I think to make a broad generalization like that, I mean, I think it misses the point because, okay, regardless of whether Republicans are getting laid all the time or not, I don't think that's going to cure any of the problems. It's this, they have a very weird obsession with sex, but like tied in with shame. Like the two are intimately connected, and that's why I kind of see some might see the purity balls thing and the girls gone wild thing as basically diametrically opposed, but I see them as different manifestations of the same, you know, weirdness, like the same just supreme, like, being uncomfortable with sex in general, and so it comes out as this twisted, perverted, and I don't mean perverted in the way, like, you know, I don't know.
Abnormal.
Anal sex is perverted. I mean, like messed up.
Like kiddie porn perverted.
Yeah.
Like, it's not honest, it's not natural, it can't be addressed in a mature, you know, responsible way, so it comes out in all these weird ways.
Well, let's, you know, it's like, whenever they talk about the stuff like, you know, supporting same-sex marriages and stuff like that, you hear guys like Rick Santorum say, well, that'll just lead to men marrying their dogs, which is ridiculous. But his supporters apparently buy it some way, shape,
or
form.
I'm just waiting for the, you know, transcripts to come out of him in a, you know, gay chat room, because I think it was John Stewart on The Daily Show one time a while ago who was like, when are people going to realize that all these people who are so vehemently anti-gay, they're all gay? I mean, have you noticed? Like,
that's a psychological thing. I mean, you fight against it. Yeah, it's self-hate, and you fight against it to try to prove that that's not what you are. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
There was a story about it recently that happened to some other guy, but I can't remember the guy's name, so I can't really speak about it. But
well,
I
you know, you have guys.
Story.
Well, you have guys like Jeff Gannon, who was a gay prostitute, for crying out loud, and here he is, you know, a big Bush supporter, and a lot of the people who were big Bush supporters would, you know, were happy to see Matthew Shepard, you know, get killed because he was gay.
Pretty sick.
We're going to talk about this a little more, and we've got a little break coming up. And after that, we'll take your phone calls, and we'll talk a little more with Agnes and Rusty. All right, we'll be back in just a little bit. This is Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now, yes I will. Keep on singing by.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Hi, I'm Janice Ian. Do you remember how excited you were at the start of summer every year and how the summer just started to drag on after a few months and you couldn't wait to get back to school, see your old friends, make new friends, get new books and a new locker and a clean slate? Well, you should have been excited about music class, too, because that was a special room where you went to sing, perform with your friends, and learn all kinds of interesting stuff about great composers, instruments, different kinds of music and songs. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They helped to spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them, and make sure they get involved with music in school and in their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play, or sing, or dream, or imagine.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
All All right, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, etc., etc., etc. I'm here with Amber and Rusty, not Agnes and Rusty. Agnes is running the board there for us. We were talking about, and I know we've got a phone caller, and we'll get to him in a second, but we were talking about this real quick, and we were bringing it up during the break about how what's going on in Iraq right now is that the death squads are going out looking for homosexuals. They killed a 14-year-old boy the other day who was they found out to be a homosexual. And that's really all part and parcel of the whole thing, isn't it? The whole hatred of sexuality in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about that, what's going on in Iraq with that in particular, to really speak about it. But, yeah, it's just another example.
Just another example. We've got, and I believe this is Gunny from North Dakota on line one. Gunny, come on in.
I'm here. Are you?
I'm here. How are you doing, Gunny?
Hey, I like that young lady. She is telling the truth. Oh, my goodness.
Well, we all tell the truth here.
That's right.
Well, yes, she does. What's her name again, girl?
Amber.
Amber. Oh, that is a beautiful name. It's a beautiful color, too.
Thanks.
And I'm just going to say something, okay? I had a friend. I had a friend in Vietnam, okay? And it was kind of, he won 2 silver stars, okay? And we used to have some beers together and all that, and, you know, After many years of service, I met him again, and it was at Pendleton in California, and he was being court-martialed for being gay, okay? And I never knew it, not in Nam. I mean, you know, he was a fine Marine. And they court-martialed him because he was found to be gay. That's in the 70s, okay? See, these people, Nixon and all of them, have a problem with people's sexuality. I mean, straight people or normal people don't have a problem with other people's sexuality. It's just sexuality. Fact. That way. I mean,
well, Bob, you and I were both in the service, Bob, and it does seem there's a lot of hatred towards that. I mean, you remember when you were in basic training, you know, if you weren't tough enough, they called you a faggot, or they called you a fairy, or they called you a sissy, and stuff like that. And why do you think that persists to this day? I mean, you would think that in the modern era, they'd be a little bit more tolerant of it.
Tolerance. There's a very important fact that's missing from our culture right now, and it's been missing for many years, and that's tolerance or acceptance or just being, just allowing other beings to be, whether they be, some people call them gay. I just thought they were other people. I never had, this is the thing, though, okay? In all the time that we stood side by side in combat together, he never hit on me. He knew I was straight. I mean, you know, it's kind of like asking a girl that's not interested in you to come on over to my side, you know, it's kind of like that. I mean, if you're not interested in it, you're not going to do it. But the funny thing about Republicans, they're all so interested in it, are they not?
I think they're obsessed with it because they feel that way themselves, and they're trying to fight those feelings.
Yeah, I mean, Amber said that so well. She really put it out there. She said it. So well.
Now, Gunny, remember, she's got her boyfriend right here, so be careful now.
Oh, well, that's nice. I thought she was gay.
Now, why did you think I was gay? Because I'm not afraid of gay people?
Hey, you're like me, girl. You defend them, don't you?
Well, actually, a lot of people think I'm gay, and it's
that's
it's
wonderful.
Funny.
Hey, a lot of people think I'm gay, but they ain't messing enough to take me on. Period.
Well, I also have short hair, and I volunteer at the Pride Festival in Atlanta, so that's another couple of things. So.
Yeah, I'll take you out for coffee any day. Hey, no, that is wonderful. I'm happy to hear that. I really am. It's not...
Bob, maybe you're thinking of Phyllis, because, you know, Phyllis is gay.
Oh, well, then maybe it's Phyllis. But, hey, Amber is just as likely a target as the next one, right?
Well, I think Rusty can vouch for Amber's heterosexuality.
Yeah, he's a macho man. Okay. That's
like people, you know, because I stand up for women's issues and I stand up for gay issues, and people think that I'm, you know, a little effeminate in the way I talk sometimes.
No,
but I think
in the way you cook.
I'm sorry?
You're a little effeminate in the way you cook.
Yeah, but
hey, damn it.
But, you know, my wife, you know, if she were here, she could tell you straight out there was nothing about that about me, you know. But you know,
hey,
it's just whatever people like, you know.
Don't defend yourself. Never do that. Never defend yourself. Accept yourself. That's the thing that Amber is saying and Phyllis is saying, and you are too.
Well, and I read something recently.
You know, accept yourself, then you can accept others.
I read something recently that was a good point about the way that Republicans and even some Democrats a lot of the time refer to... you know, so-called gay issues. They say, they preface things with, hey, I don't care what two people do in the bedroom. But then, why is it always about sex? Why is that like the first thing, like as if being gay is only defined by what you do in the bedroom, and it's not about like just being a person, just being a human being.
You're absolutely right there. See, the problem with Republicans is they are obsessed with sex, and most liberals and Democrats and progressive people realize that sex is just one tiny little aspect of the human experience. It's just a small thing. It doesn't even matter. It's probably teeny. You know, I mean, it's kind of like most of those Republican... okay, phalluses, they're kind of tiny, and they want them to be bigger, like Jeff Gannon.
Well, they like these little smokescreen issues to distract from the fact that, you know, gas is $3 a gallon, and we've got a failing war, and we've got an economy that hasn't really come out of the gutter, and a million other things that they are failing at. So they throw out a little smokescreen oh, you know, look at all the fags running around.
Doesn't that
offend you, you know, suburban white America?
Is this Rusty?
Yeah.
That's Rusty.
Hey,
that is me.
Hey, that's great, Rusty. You understand. Stand it. It is a smokescreen. It is absolutely that. It's kind of like, okay, let's throw some more wool over these people's eyes, you know?
Well, that's standard operating procedure for them. I mean, whether they're you know, the Republicans managed to maintain their power throughout the 50s by going after communists because the New Deal was in full swing and the country was doing great, unless you were a black person, of course. But the Republicans kept their majority, or not majority, but they kept up their elections by railing against communists, and now they're railing against liberals and gays and blacks and whoever.
Yeah, there's an interesting point there. Actually, a lot of this sort of theocratic tendencies that come out of the Republican Party came out of that era because Soviet Russia had declared atheism as its official state religion.
Right.
And so the words, "In God We Trust," were not the official motto of the country until 1956.
Right, and "Under God" wasn't added to the Pledge of Allegiance until that time.
Actually,
absolutely.
I think it was, it was added later.
Guys,
hey,
we're arguing semantics here, okay?
Yeah.
The problem that I see is this, okay? We're starting to get organized. We're not quite there yet. We're looking at an election this year, and we're looking at how many people can we get to the polls, and are their votes going to be counted? We're looking at a lot of different variables here, okay?
Well, we got a lot of different things going on in the future, and I hate to cut you short, Bob, but we really do have to go to a break.
I'm just saying, we have to get with it now, Joe, not tomorrow, not the next day.
Well, that's what we're doing here on the Head-On Network, Bob. We're doing it now. It just takes time for it to build up.
I'm just here to put a boot in your butt, boy.
You'll have to wait in line. I've got several people waiting.
I will do it with love, okay?
You'll do it with love. Okay, well, that's what they all say, too. Listen, we really got to let you go because we got the bottom of the hour coming up. But Gunny, nice of you to call in.
Yeah.
Nice
of you to take my call.
Always, Gunny, always.
My respect to you and my love to Agnes.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Okay, we're heading up on the bottom of the hour here.
Bye-bye.
And we're heading out in the bottom of the hour here, and as soon as I hear the music kick in, we can head off to another break. There we go. Okay, we'll be back with more on the Coverture Radio Show on the Head-On Radio Network.
When I'm feeling down, you give me such a vibe. I just totally bona fide. It's not the way you walk, and it ain't the way you talk. It ain't the job you got that keeps me satisfied. Your love is so good.
Been to the playground lately? If you have young children, you should take a look. Even though kids have been swinging and climbing and teetering for generations, playgrounds still manage to injure 500,000 kids each year. Check for hard landing surfaces, sharp edges, and broken equipment. Outdoor play is healthy for kids, but a playground that's unsafe and unsupervised can quickly become the pain ground. For more on playground safety, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible. A cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Rock it up, roll it up, do it all, have a ball. Saturday night here, and we're talking with Amber and Rusty. I love that song. Bay City Rollers, classic disco from the 70s. I grew up in that era, and I had to listen to all that stuff. And actually, a lot of rock people hated disco because they thought it was all the glitter. And really what they were against was the personalities and all the glitter and all the other crap going on with it. But there was some, you know, that's not one of the greatest songs from the disco era. That's one of the more cheesy ones. But there was some very good music that came out of that era. And I was just in a kind of disco mood tonight. Every now and then I get a mood for a particular type of music. Do you guys dance? Do you guys go out dancing or do anything like that?
Any attempt by me to dance has just ended in disaster.
You're like Elaine from Seinfeld, huh?
I try not to throw my thumbs around as much, but pretty much.
I never danced. The last time I attempted to dance was at my sister's wedding last year, and needless to say, the police had to be called in. So it was not a pleasant sight. Anyway, what we were talking about, let's talk a little bit more about the Georgia Podcast Network and what you want to accomplish with it. I mean, it's not just, you do your own show. How many, is it just your show on there now and my show? Who else is on there?
Well, right now we have network programs and affiliate programs. Affiliate programs being those like yours, who are people who already have their own shows hosted elsewhere. And by being an affiliate, we just link to their shows. Network programs are ones that are actually hosted on our site, on the Georgia Podcast Network, and we have three at the moment. We have the one that Rusty and I do together, which is called Mostly ITP. And if you don't live in Atlanta, you don't know what that means, but it means Inside the Perimeter,
mm-hmm.
Which is the cool place to be in Atlanta.
And we are barely inside the perimeter here, I'm barely cool.
And we also have the Georgia Politics Podcast, which is a roundtable discussion that our friend Joseph heads up. And the North Fulton Drama Club podcast is, as you might imagine, done by the North Fulton Drama Club, which was also started by a few of our friends.
You know, I got to get a hold of those guys because I've been looking at trying to get like a drama club or something like that to do little skits for the radio and things like that, because I like to write stuff, but I can't do all the voices and stuff. The website is gapodcastnetwork.com. It's a very, very nice looking site. I love the color and the nice little curves on all the box there. Very, very well put together. Of course, it's done by you, Amber, and you do this professionally.
Well, both
so
of us.
You both of together.
Rusty
okay.
did like the design of it, you know, the mock-ups and Photoshop and all that. He did a lot of the back-end work, programming. And then I did all the CSS and cascading style sheets. Here comes my tech speak to actually, you know, make it look the way it does on the actual website. So it's been several months of like a lot of nights and weekend work from us, but hopefully it's going to pay off.
About how many people do you have on your regular network, not counting your affiliates?
Well, we have the three shows right now.
Just three shows?
Yeah.
And is it just you and Rusty at that point, or is there other people besides you and Rusty?
Well, no. Like I said, we have the Georgia Politics Podcast.
That's right. I'm sorry.
And
Which, yeah, there's five people, or at least there were five people in the last episode of that, and North Fulton Drama Club had, what, four?
Four people,
and that'll be about par for that. And we've also got another show coming up in probably the next 2 or 3 weeks. It'll be a brand new show that we can't talk about just yet,
But it's going to be awesome.
And, of course, you have, who else is affiliates besides me?
Well, we have, it just spans across the board. I mean, we have Young Democrats of Atlanta podcast, three podcasts from WUOG, which is the University of Georgia student radio station. We have a church that podcasts their sermons. We have, what else do we
have? Underground Rap.
Yeah. What else? We've just got, I mean, all different kinds of stuff.
See, that's really cool. You know, one of the things I've been wanting to do, because, you know, I like doing the show weekly. Well, I like doing the show, but doing it weekly can be a real pain in the butt, because if I miss a guest, then I have to wait a whole week for something. Like last week, we're trying to get Mary Scott O'Connor from MyLeftWing.com, who had that day been featured front page on the Washington Post. But her son hurt his leg, and she had to run off to the hospital. So so she couldn't be on the show, and she couldn't be on the show last week because we weren't on the air, and she's not on the show this week because it's her birthday this week. By the way, happy birthday to Mary Scott O'Connor. But, you know, what I would really like to do is to do like a music show. And I want to do a show called Audio Hell, which is kind of like a Dr. Demento type of thing, where I play all these little goofy comedy bits and what the doctor calls novelty songs. So... But at any rate, I'm really happy to be part of it. Just like I'm happy to be part of the Head On Network. Everything, you know, the new technology, and I look at it, really, the internet is the first truly populist technology. I mean, when the printing presses first came out, way back when, you still had to own a printing press in order to print stuff out. When radio and television came out later, and any other form of technology, you had to have very specialized equipment in order to broadcast it out or get it out to a lot of people. It's very expensive, and you had to have investors, so not just anybody can get it on. But with the blogs and with the radio technology that we can do the streaming, anybody can really do it. I mean, it obviously takes some equipment. You have to have a computer, and you have to have all the other stuff. But and you guys are much more in tune with it from a hardware and software aspect than I am.
Yeah, we're techies by trade, so... But and let's hope it stays that way as far as the web being a populist. What's the word? What did you say? Whatever you said.
Populist. It was a populist technology.
Technology.
Let's hope it stays that way, because I was telling my mom about the Georgia Podcast Network, and her questions were things like, well, can you use whatever words you want? Can you say whatever you want? And I said, yeah. I mean, as long as we don't, you know, we. We can't, like, say stuff that'll get us sued, but, I mean, aside from that, I can drop an F-bomb if I want to. We're not beholden to the FCC or anything, which is really awesome, and let's just hope it stays that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I hope so, too, and of course you have to be careful watching the language here. I've had to try to censor myself from time to time, because, you know, I'm from Brooklyn, and as I'm fond of saying, we people in Brooklyn, we invented cursing. You know what I mean? It's like the Brooklyn alphabet. You heard the Brooklyn alphabet, right? F and A, F and B,
yeah.
F and C.
That's right. Pretty funny.
And, let's talk about this net neutrality issue, because that's something that's been coming up. And let me try to explain it very briefly. Whereas, okay, if you look at the internet like it's a bunch of pipes and water running through pipes. Basically, what these companies have, the big telecom companies, they're very upset that traffic at places like Google is much bigger than in other places, and they don't get any extra money for it. The whole net neutrality thing means every blog is the same speed, depending on what you're getting at home. So people can access my blog just as quickly as they can access the New York Times. And what the telecoms want to do is to have like a two-tiered system, where if you pay them a bigger royalty fee, then you know the service to your site is faster. And if you don't pay them, then they'll do things to slow you down, mess you up, and really try to take away the populist part of it. And are you guys more familiar with this than I am? Or?
I'm pretty familiar with it. Bell South, in fact, was lobbying the state legislature this time around. It actually didn't pertain directly to net neutrality. What they were lobbying for was SB 120, which, I'm going to grope around for it here for a second. But the net effect of the bill was that it would let Bell South enter a unregulated broadband market with all of their wares that they gained back, you know, in the 80s and 90s when they had a monopoly on all the telecom. So, you know, you get into this issue of Bell South and Comcast and a few other companies having access to all these pipes, and the next logical step for them is to leverage that advantage that into just you know, charging the two-tiered system like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, that was bad.
It's absolutely like just the opposite of what the web is supposed to be. I mean, Tim Berners-Lee, who is the guy who invented the web, literally, and I mean, I don't throw around the word literally, but he did invent the web. He invented HTML, just this one guy, and he put out wrote a statement recently, several days ago, about, you know, this is not what he had in mind when he invented the World Wide Web. This is not what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a medium for anybody to access anytime, you know, not to be regulated by tiers or anything like that. So, hey, if this guy's saying it, maybe we should listen to him. He invented it.
The good news about this issue, though, is that a lot of Republicans are pissed about this, too. It's something that goes across political ideologies. So the telecoms are gonna meet a sledgehammer when they try to get this.
I hope so, because it's really, you know, I don't want to see what we have now taken away. Because I like doing this. I like being on the head on that one. I like writing my blog. I mean, I know I only get about 100 or so hits a day. But if they make it so that mine is much more difficult to access, then that'll drop down to maybe 20 or 30. And quite frankly, I'm not going to sit there and do a show or write a blog and take all the time that I do for 20 people. I mean, I barely do it for 100 people. The only reason I continue to do it is because I hope that somebody will start to pay attention to me. Pay attention. Hello? Hello? But anyway,
we're paying attention.
We're paying attention. I know. Well, you got, you know, and the thing about it is, I get noticed from guys like you know, Bob Kincaid, who noticed me and put the My Cup of Joe report on his show, and Bob and Ben Birch actively going after me. But you know, we were talking about this before the show started about some of the larger blogs like Atrios and like Daily Kos and all those other people and how they got big, and we were wondering at what point did they go from just a few hits here and there to all of a sudden, like, boom, what was the thing? And nowadays it's much more difficult for a blogger starting out to get any kind of attention. And they're always trying to tell you that you have to go on message boards and you have to constantly push. And that, A, it doesn't always work, because sometimes if you do that, people get mad at you for blog whoring, which is the term they use for advertising. And it takes a lot of time. I mean, you could literally spend hours just chatting with somebody. You get involved in any of these chat room debates at all?
No, I don't have time.
That's a big reason. I mean, you've seen some of the comments that come out of some of these things, and you try to argue with people.
I just don't have time to get involved in that kind of chest thumping that's non-productive. But as far as what blogs get popular and why, I don't know. I think a lot of it might just be luck. I mean, honestly. Like I said before the show started, Atrios and I started our blogs on exactly the same day. Clearly, I am not a self-sustaining blogger.
Right.
But, you know, my blog gets hits, but, I mean, come on, I'm no Atrios. But
well, let me ask, about how many hits a day do you get? Do you keep track of it?
Between 150 and 200.
See, and you're doing a little better than me.
Well, I don't know. And the other thing about, you're talking about blog whoring. I mean, I've spoken with several people, you know, recently who have been like, well, I want to start a blog, but I just don't know what to write about. I don't know. Well, here's the thing. Like, if you set out to start a blog thinking, I need to start a blog and I need to write about this stuff and I need to, like, you pressure yourself, it's going to feel forced. It's not going to be good. It's going to seem not authentic. So, you know, the main thing is, for a successful blog to be successful, it has to have good content. Otherwise, why is anybody going
to
read it?
Right. I try to have good content on mine. And every now and then I come up with a good one. Actually, one of the people on Daily Coast to know. Because I have a diary on Coast, but I hardly ever post there. Because every time I post a diary, somebody comes up with some complaint about something. You misspelled a word here. There's a little typo. And then your use of punctuation was less than professional.
Ah, the grammar police.
Yeah, you know, and I'm like,
an M dash. You should have used a semicolon.
Oh God, it's almost that bad. And Democratic Underground is the worst of all of them.
I've
bad
never even been there.
Oh my God. Well, that's been around a lot longer, and it's just there's so many smarmy. I did a post, and I keep bringing up this one. I did a post called "Jane, You Ignorant Slut." And that was basically named, for those of you who are old enough, it was the old Saturday Night Live skit.
I know what it is.
You know what it is. You're just about of age, I guess. But I actually remember that stuff live. And it was Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin doing like a point-counterpoint thing. And Dan Aykroyd always started his with, "Jane, you ignorant slut." And the whole premise of the article was, you know, we argue with each other very badly. I mean, back then that was a parody. Now it seems to be the norm for, you know, political discussion or any kind of conversation discussion. And people were mad at me because I used the word slut in the title and completely missed the entire point of it. And I'm not the only one who's done this.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen other people who come out and they say something that get people angry, and they have to turn around and apologize to people, because if they don't apologize to people, you know, no one will pay any attention.
Well, but then they just proved your point by just getting offended by the word.
Right.
I mean, I guess.
Well, I used the N-word in my most recent Cup of Joe report in speaking about Darfur. And I was saying that, you know, most people in America, and this is the plain truth, really don't care about a bunch of, you know, brothers over in Africa. They really don't. I mean, and I hate to say it that way, but that's the mind process. And there would be people who would get more upset with me just for using the N-word than would be upset at what actually is going on. Almost 500,000 people have been killed.
Right.
In Darfur, and millions left homeless. But, oh, you can't say the N-word.
20, you know what, 20 million dead people versus 7 letters?
Yeah, exactly.
Christ.
It's 6 letters.
Well, whatever.
Nevertheless.
I wasn't counting. Yeah, you're right, it is 6 letters.
Well, look at what happened with Stephen Colbert this recently at the White House. I'm sure you heard about this whole deal.
I watched the whole bit, actually.
And it was brilliant. It was one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. And Colbert, I'm really more of a Jon Stewart fan than a Stephen Colbert fan, but what he did there was just, it took a tremendous amount of courage, and obviously the audience
sitting like 15 feet away from him.
Oh, my God. And, you know, I don't know what they were thinking about by putting him on there, because if they'd ever seen his show, they would realize that he's doing a parody of what. And when he made that point about, you know, the Bush decides, the press secretary announces, and you guys type it up. Press, you know, the side announced type, you know, and then they can go home and write that novel you've been thinking about the intrepid reporter fighting the White House, you know, fiction. And if you listen to all the news reports, if you read any of the reports in the paper, Colbert's name was never mentioned. All they were talking about, the Bush had his, was making fun of himself.
I know, that was disgusting.
And, you know, and because they couldn't handle it, because there's such a bunch of whores, they're all kind of piled in together.
I'm amazed there was no coverage at all. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised to see negative coverage of it. I wouldn't have been surprised to say, oh, well, Colbert stepped over the line, you know, bullshit on the line. But
the AJC, just one little article.
Excuse me with the profanity.
No, I mean, but it was like just one little article where this guy editorial was being a curmudgeon. And he was like, he's just not funny.
Yeah. Well, it was not funny to the people in the room, because he was attacking them as much as he was attacking the president. I wrote a little thing today on the blog about what would happen if Bush just shot somebody. And the thing I gave was here were the facts, and this was how the news reported. And the facts were that Bush called on a guy. He asked him a question about Iraq. Bush called him up to the podium and shot him in the chest, then shot him twice in the head, and then turned the podium over to Tony Snow. And the press conference continued for 30 minutes with the guy's dead body right there.
Well,
and how the press reported it was that we're not really sure exactly what happened. there's inconclusive. One guy said this happened. Another guy said this happened. So we're really not sure. And the White House won't comment on it because there's an investigation going on.
Was it in Colbert's bit that I heard that Tony Snow's Secret Service nickname is Snowjob?
I think that was in there, yeah.
Have you heard the David Cross bit where he's like, the only evil thing for Bush left to do is to, like, eat a Jewish baby.
and even then, there'd be people
defending
him,
me.
You know?
Yes.
He's just following good dietary practice.
Yeah,
you know,
just
babies are good in fiber and fat and all that stuff. And the lengths they go through. I mean, it's like the whole Porter Goss thing. And this is not just any job. This guy quit as head of the CIA with no notice. And he wasn't, you know, while he was kind of sort of mentioned in the prostitute thing, no one really mentioned his name directly. And he just quit. It's not a job you just quit. And I'm reading commenters, you know, I don't know if these guys are like paid Republican trolls or something, but he's so busy defending, you know, he had a job, he quit it. People quit jobs every day. Why is everybody making such a big deal about this? Joe Torre, the manager of the New York Yankees, abruptly quit in the middle of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
You think, you know, you don't think that would raise some, in fact, that would raise more eyebrows from the press than the head of the CIA quitting. Yeah. And that's the state of things in American journalism today.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was funny because I was thinking of the Colbert thing, and I was thinking Jon Stewart was doing the same thing to the Hollywood crowd at the Oscars, because he was really kind of sort of making fun of them, and the laughter seemed a little bit nervous to some of those types, you know, because they were like, is he talking about us? Is that talking about me? He's not talking about me.
Answer,
no.
Yes.
Answer, yes. Anyway, we've reached a blank here, haven't we?
Well, I mean, there's just so many directions.
There's so many directions we can take at this point. What was the big, apart from the Porter Goss story, what was the big story of the week for you guys, as far as politics are concerned?
Oh God, I was just
there's so much going on.
Dig out from under a mountain of work, so I didn't really.
Yeah, I was the same way.
Stay as engaged as I should have.
Well, do you think that's a big problem here because a lot of people work very hard?
Yeah, I do actually. I used to follow it a lot more closely when I didn't have a job I was working at all the time.
But do you think it helps your sanity not to follow it?
Sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't, because sometimes I will just kind of come back to it briefly. You know, I might have an evening where I was unexpectedly free, and oh, let's turn on the news and see what's on. You know, let's go to the Guardian or the New York Times website. Oh God, all this bad stuff happened, and you know, I don't know if it's worse not to know or to know sometimes.
I mean, I like to know, but I can't follow it too closely. Like, I can't. It takes a certain constitution to be able to read, like, all this depressing, horrible stuff. Like, not just in the papers and on the news, but then there are a lot of bloggers that just only post the most horrible, depressing stuff. And you're like, I don't have enough reserves in my brain to feel depressed about all of these things, like, it just, and then it just makes me feel like just this sense of inertia. I just can't handle it anymore.
What I don't understand is how the right-wingers can maintain that sense of phony anger. I mean, even if they know a story isn't true, just you know, ragging on the same stuff over and over again and getting so reactionary about things that are such little important.
Well, there's a complex there, too. It's this persecution complex where, you know, somehow they're running Congress, they're running the executive branch, they're running the judiciary,
and
somehow yet they're the ones whose views are getting stomped out of the...
Like that woman who wanted to ban Harry Potter in Gwinnett County, she was like, this anti-Christian stance in American schools has got to stop. We have got to speak up. We can't be stepped on anymore. What?
You know what the joke is that this kind of stuff ends up being a self-fulfilling prophecy, too, because I would like to bash that woman in the face with a brick.
That's not a real threat. Please don't
say. Yeah, not a real threat. That's...
My line is, this is why they used to throw them to the lions.
Yeah.
You know, there really is something about, you know, it's taking away their rights if they can't totally dominate us and force everything down our own throats.
It's not a theocracy. It's not good enough. You know, you actually have a choice not to be a Christian. I guess that's a problem.
And, you know, I'm an agnostic, and agnostics and atheists in this country are less popular than terrorists. Terrorists are given higher marks than...
they've got a religion.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know,
our it's like, you know, at least they picked a side. I'm an agnostic, too.
I think agnosticism is the only rational way to go. Because, you know, it's funny. I don't believe in atheism, which is kind of stupid. But, you know, to me, that certainty of there is or there isn't, I'm not capable of that. Because I always see things in kind of shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
Even among Republicans, I kind of try to see what their side is on the issue. And I think I kind of sort of understand sometimes what their viewpoint is. But, you know, that they're filled with such hatred against anybody that they find different or anybody, you know, any straw man that's put up. I mean, I don't know if you've seen on Digby, they put up some of the T-shirts that they sell. It says, Rope Tree Journalists Assembly Required. And they accuse, and when we say something back on that, then, then, you know, they say, well, you're just hateful. You're a hater.
It's some nice doublethink going on there.
Well, it's nice because, you know, Bush might send, you know, 2,000 people might die today, and I'm the one being cynical.
Yeah.
You know, all these people are being sent off to this place to get shot, and, you know, their families' benefits are being cut.
It's probably because you didn't go to church today.
That's right.
Yeah.
Heathen.
Or in the last decade, but...
Well, listen, we're coming up on the top of the hour here, and we're going to have to take a break. And you guys are going to have to head out, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
You got some business, personal business to take care of, I guess. What do you got going on? What, are you just going on a date or something? Or?
Well, we're actually taking a much-deserved break this weekend because we've been working so hard for the past several months on getting the podcast network site up that right. We haven't had much time to relax. So
well,
we're
I'm
just
glad you had a time to a chance to stop by and talk with me because I really do like having you in the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay, well, we're going to go on a break, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with a lady who yelled at Donald Rumsfeld the other day. And as soon as I hear the music, we'll pop out. Here we go. All right, we'll be back with more on the Cover Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
She had to go like 3 miles out of her way because Bush was there visiting. And he had his whole entourage and Secret Service, and they were blocking off the road, the highway that she has to take to get to work.
The Bush got you down? Let Grace and Rama Homebodies get you up every Sunday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network and homebodies.ramabahama.net. We'll trim the mess for you.
Tried to make it Sunday, but
But I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the numbers to call in are 1-877-4-HEAD-ON or 1-877-443-2366. And how is everybody doing tonight? Amber and Rusty have split. They went on their date, and they're gonna have a good time. They're relaxing, like they said. So, and I'm glad to have them on the show, and I'll try to have them on the show a little bit more often. Now, over this last week, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld came here to Atlanta to speak, and he was interrupted by several protesters, and one of them was an ex-CIA guy, and he basically lambasted Mr. Rumsfeld about his lies concerning the Iraq war, and basically he said, Rumsfeld, you said that you knew where they were, and Rumsfeld said, I didn't say that, even though we have it on tape that he said that. So Rumsfeld is a big lying SOB, but we know that about all the Bush administration people. And I have with me here in the studio, and actually she was here on my last show, her name is Gloria Tatum, is that right? I hope that's right. And she was one of the protesters who was taken away after yelling at Rumsfeld. Gloria, are you there? Can you come on? Yes, I am, Joe. Hi, how you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
Good to have you back on the show. Now, first of all, how did you get a ticket for this event? Because usually these things are pretty, you know, selective. They won't let just anybody in.
Well, that's true, Joe. This is the first time, in my knowledge, that the public has been allowed into these events. Normally, it's by invitation only. And in order to get an invitation, you have to be a huge contributor to the Republican Party.
Right.
So you can't get in. They travel around in a little isolated bubble with only people who give them a lot of money, or they go to military bases. They are never, ever around the public. And as you can see, this is why. Because they can't be around the public, because the public hates these people.
What it kind of reminds me of is many years ago, Rush Limbaugh was actually guest hosting the old Pat Sajak show, and Sajak had a late-night talk show. And the audience was just on his case, and he wound up actually having to empty the audience out and finishing up by himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the same way with Mr. Bush and Mr. Rumsfeld. Now
it is. They can't go to things that are open to the public. But anyway, this was, and we were so happy. I mean, you know, it was $40 to get in. And we were thrilled that there was finally something that the public could go to. So, four of us, there was other people in there that, you know, were there to ask questions from the peace community. And, there was two of the people that disrupted were from, the World Can't Wait. And then there was two from, the Georgia Peace and Justice Coalition, and I'm also with International Action. So it's, you know, started out with Rumsfeld giving his speech, and about 5 minutes into it, the first woman stood up and threw out a little banner that said guilty, of war crimes. And she started talking about, well, nobody could hear her because the, you know, it was a pro-Bush, pro-Rumsfeld, pro-war group, which, you know, they accidentally let a few opened it up, and some of the public actually got in. But it was mainly Bush supporters. And they booed, and they, you know, shut up, you know, throw her out, get out of here, shut up. And a lot of, you know, screaming. And then the security came, and she was, you know, yelling about the torture, the torture and in Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo and all the little torture black spots throughout the world that they take these people. And actually, a guy last night was talking about how one was boiled in hot water and killed, and all of his fingernails pulled out.
Wonderful.
I mean,
that's what we've come to in this era, hasn't it?
Horrible, the things that we're doing. I mean, it's not. I'm sorry, but it's not American what we're doing. It's more Nazi Germany what we're doing, and the people don't know because the media won't tell. You know, you've got Paula Zahn, the queen of right wing propaganda, on CNN, and Wolf Blitzer is not much better. And that's the good station, you know. And then you've got Fox. This really, really is right wing. And then about, you know, the security came and they took her away. And the audience calmed down. They thought that was it, you know. And they were going, and Rumsfeld, you know, did his usual little smirky grin and laugh and said, "Oh, I guess that's an undecided." And everybody giggled and laughed. And Rumsfeld said, "Thank you, Sergeant York," like, you know, thank you for getting rid of her. So,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, when did you stand up?
Okay, that was the first one, and everybody thought it was over at that point, you know. And then a few minutes later, a man stands up and turns his back to Rumsfeld.
Well, yeah, I saw that.
He just stands up and turns his back. And so everyone's looking at him instead of listening to Rumsfeld. You know, everybody's like, what is he going to do? And he doesn't do anything but just stand there. So, you know, and people sort of got used to him standing there, and they were beginning to pay attention to Rumsfeld again. And then I stand up, you know. I throw out a banner that says Rumsfeld, a serial liar. And then a woman behind me starts hitting on me and grabbing me and trying to throw me down, and other people grabbing my banner. And I guess, you know, now they're sort of over, they sort of know something's happening, and they're like, the audience is sort of attacking me, and I'm hollering at the top of my lungs, and lots of people said they didn't know I could yell that loud. I was hollering, you know, Rumsfeld, you have lied to the American people. You lied about weapons of mass destruction. You lied about Iraq's nuclear program. You lied about Iraq's ties to Al-Qaeda. And you even lied about the fact that the Iraq's oil would be used to pay for the war. The taxpayers wouldn't have to pay this. Iraq's oil would pay for the entire war. Do y'all remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, they've carried me out into a room where there's about 20, mostly men and, you know, black stuff with a lot of guns, or, you know, the Red Dog Crew, which is the elite group in, I guess, in town. And this other little woman was sitting there handcuffed with handcuffs behind, you know, behind her back. And they didn't handcuff me, because I said, I told them, I said, be gentle with me, I'm old, you know, don't hurt me. So anyway, they didn't handcuff me. So we sat there for a long time, and, you know, I knew that there was one more person that was going to stand up, but, you know, they're getting close to the question and answer. We've disrupted him all through his, you know, he can't talk because it's just one disruption right after the other. Then the main security guy comes after a while and tells us, if you will leave the premises and not return, you can go. But if you come back, we're going to put you in jail. So, you know, I said, thank you very much, and I left and went out to the street and joined the protest outside, which there was, I don't know, about maybe 30 or more people protesting on the street.
And well, I'm glad you didn't get arrested, that's for sure.
No, oh, I am too. I had my toothbrush and my socks and a shawl and some food in my purse so that I could make it, you know, until somebody bailed me out. I was very happy not to go to jail. And then there was still one more man that stood up after they took me out and disrupted it a third time. And he, you know, screamed, "Rumsfeld, you're a war criminal." I think some other things. And then they took him out, and also he came up to the street. And during all of this time, the other guy's still standing there with his back to Rumsfeld. And they, you know, and then when the question and answer period started, he leaves also. And then, of course, you know, Ray McGovern, the CIA, the retired CIA analyst, he was in the CIA for 27 years, he gets up there and asks him, "Why did you take us to war based on lies?" You know, and of course Rumsfeld denies it, and you know, tries to worm his way out of it.
He just flat out lied.
Lies his way, and then he lies about the lie. You know.
Oh yeah, that's just the thing. He lied. You know, we have it. I was saying before, we have it on videotape where he says we know exactly where the weapons are. They're in the Cretan area of North and blah blah blah. I mean, he wasn't qualifying it. He wasn't saying that they were suspected sites. This is a definite. And now he's, you know, he's out there in this thing saying, "I never said that. I never said that," which is pure BS because he did say that. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad he challenged it.
Yeah, he lied about the lie. But the reason I did it is because the media doesn't talk about the fact that this whole thing was based on lies. And a lot of people knew this before the war. It's not like, "Oh, well, we didn't know, but now we do know." We did know before. Scott Ritter, who was a weapons inspector for 12 years in Iraq, he went around to every major university in the country, gave lectures before the war saying Iraq has nothing of significance left. You know, I mean, who should know but the weapons inspectors? There were CIA people that were saying, you know, all of this is not true. And then as far as the nuclear program goes, they got that information from a guy named Curveball, and the CIA told them at the time that the information was not credible. But they used it anyway. And then they discovered the whole thing was a really sloppy forgery, the entire information. And I've heard, you know, on the grapevine that whole forgery, Niger uranium thing, all of those lies may be traced right back to the vice president.
Yeah, Mr. Cheney is probably very heavily involved.
Who was behind that? In the Downing Street memos, they've got proof that before the war, these people were talking back, and this was a leaked, you know, secret memo. You know, Blair and Bush were talking back and forth, and they said, "Oh, you know, don't worry about the intelligence, because we're going to fit the intelligence to fit the policy." So, you know, they admitted that they were just making stuff up and making it look good. It's just outrageous, all of it. And then since when do we have a first strike policy on people? It's just insane what these people have done, and the media doesn't talk about this. They don't talk about this.
They won't talk about Iran. I mean, they'll talk about it in the sense of, "Oh, here's this crazy president," even though the president of Iran doesn't have any real authority to launch war or to do anything like that. So they're looking to drop nukes on Iran, and it's remarkable that we're going through the same process all over again, you know, and because they did it all with Iraq, and some of us, and I'm sure you did too, some of us who understood what was going on knew they were lying out their butts, and know they're still lying about their butts about it, mm-hmm. And unfortunately we can't get anybody to listen.
Well, the media won't report. That's why I did what I did, is because you can't get this information out, because the media, I don't know what's wrong with them. They just won't report the truth.
Well, I think a lot of it is that they're just more interested in their own status than they are in actually fulfilling the truth. I mean, nowadays, especially when you're talking about TV reporters, these people make a lot of money. And they make a lot, you know, I keep saying about this, back in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and stuff like that, most people got their news from newspapers. And the average beat reporter at the newspapers made about the same kind of money as everybody else was making. Nowadays, you have, you know, the especially when you're talking about TV people, like I said, they make so much more money. And they're very ambitious, and they, you know, they want to get a big career where they have a name for themselves. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, they ingratiate themselves with the politicians.
Oh, yeah. They're more interested in their security in their job than they are the truth and their promotions and who's in power that likes them. And, you know, that's what's wrong today. And, yeah, and these people are now planning a first strike, kinder but gentler nuclear war with Iran. I mean, it is totally, totally insane. And I mean, I personally think that these people are going to do this before the election because Bush, you know, can be in, if they lose the Congress, then they won't be able to do it. So they have to do a nuclear strike before the election and have everybody so scared and confused they won't know what to do, and then they can declare, like, I don't know, you know, a police state or something because he's a war president.
Well, frankly, I'm not sure if Democrats
really
retake
need to
Congress.
Start paying attention. They need to call their Congress people. They need to call them every hour. They need to write them. They need to stand up and shout, no, I'm not going to, you know, let you destroy this world, you insane warmonger, you. People have got to get engaged, or we're not, you know, he is just going to start something so ugly that's going to put all of us back so far that, you know.
Well, you know, what I said on one of my Cup of Joe reports this last week, which, by the way, can be heard on Bob Kincaid's show, Hit on Radio, what I said was that if Bush orders a bomb to be dropped on Iran, then I call on the military people to remember their oath is to the Constitution and not to the President, and to disobey that order, because that would be a clearly illegal order. And I call upon us to just go out and take him out of power. If Congress won't impeach him, he should be taken out by force. Because if he orders a bomb, a nuclear bomb in particular, to be dropped on Iran, I mean, Iraq was a bad enough war crime, and that would be even worse because of the massive death that would occur from that. And I want to hold the newspaper people and all the other reporters up, you know, hold their feet to the fire on this too, because even though they're not personally responsible for it, they are complicit with it, because they either know what's going on or they just simply weren't doing their jobs. At the very least, they ought to be drummed out of the journalism business. So.
Well, he's really got a good, you know, everybody wants to keep their job, so they go along, you know, I was just following orders, you know.
The old thing,
following orders in order to keep their job, and that seems to be, but, I mean, people have really got to start paying attention in this country. They have got to get engaged. They have got to really go down to their Congress people's office, do sit-ins, call them constantly. And, you know, if he does this, we all need to go up to Washington and just sit down and stay there, because we have got to take our country back before this insane warmonger destroys it.
Maybe what we could do is we can get, you know, like to have the immigration protest. We'll get millions of people up there, and we'll have everybody crowd as much as possible in front of every single entrance to the White House, to the Congress.
We could
keep them all out.
We could stop this if people weren't, you know, like, oh, I don't have time. I have to play tennis. You know, that kind of bullshit.
No. Sorry, Gloria. We have to watch the language here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But, I mean, you know, I mean, people, they don't have their priorities. I mean, this guy is going to destroy this country.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who seriously
destroy the Middle East. He's going to kill hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, he's already killed, you know, 100,000. He's going to kill hundreds of thousands of people.
Well, cynic that I am, I think it's going to be far worse than we can even imagine. Because
oh, it is going to be far worse.
I think if the nuke starts flying, we're talking about deaths in the billions.
Oh, and you know, the radiation and the cancer deaths, it's going to keep on going forever and ever and ever. But it could be stopped if people in this country would simply wake up and do something.
Well, if we had more people with your courage to stand up to the powers that be and just tell them the truth and tell them you're not going to put up with it.
Stand up and tell them the truth. That's all we have to do to stop it.
Well, listen, Gloria, I hate to cut you short here, but we have to go on a break. But listen, I just wanted to say how proud we are all are of you for standing up to one of the most evil people in the world, and I'm glad that you had your say to him, and I'm glad you didn't wind up going to jail. But you know what? Sometimes that's the price you got to pay. That sometimes that is the price you have to pay. But I'm glad you didn't have to pay it.
Well, I would certainly be happy to pay it.
But listen, I'm really glad to have you on the show, and of course you're welcome to come on any time you want because I always want to find out what's going on as far as real act. Because you know I'm really not so much of an activist as I am as an observer and a commentator. And I'd probably be very bad at a protest. I would probably get my butt kicked somewhere.
You're doing your part.
I do what I can. I do what little I can. Okay, we're going to go on a little break here, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about some more labor issues with the air traffic controllers. Gloria, thanks again for coming on the show, and we'll have you on again pretty soon, okay? All right, let's get a little music going here so we can head off to a break. Ah, there we go. And like I said, we'll be back with somebody I know pretty well. And we'll be back with more on the Cup Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong, I learned how to get along. And so you're back from outer space. I just walked in to find you here without that look upon your face. I should have changed my fucking lock. I would have made you leave your key if I don't put just...
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Okay, isn't it just hilarious when an adult who is destroying the nation, violating our laws, shredding our Constitution, and leading us into bankruptcy makes fun of himself with a double who pretends to interpret his mediocrity? That's what most of the Washington, D.C. correspondents thought when Bush, in a well-rehearsed sketch out of the Milton Berle playbook, outdid his tasteless search for WMDs at the same dinner a couple of years ago. Bush is just a laugh riot for all these high-paid transcribers. He's just a mischievous teenager at heart, except that thousands have died in Iraq, and he is planning on preemptively dropping nuclear bombs on a nation that we are not at war with. But when Stephen Colbert took the stage and brilliantly sliced and diced up the corrupt relationship between the passive Beltway media and the Bush White House, most of the so-called reporters sat in silence or occasionally uncomfortably tittered. What was a guy doing on stage, a comedian at that? What was he doing shoving the truth down their throats? That's darn right embarrassing. After all, Colbert advised them to take a day off after recording White House pronouncements and posting them as journalism. He recommended, quote, write that novel you got kicking around in your head. You know, the one about the intrepid Washington reporter with the courage to stand up to the administration. You know, fiction. Ouch. Elizabeth Buemiller, the New York Times public relations specialist for the White House, wrote the evening up as a laugh riot centering around George W. Bush's doublemint twins stunt. It must have been a long evening for Elizabeth, because she forgot to even mention Stephen Colbert's appearance. It was perfect hypocrisy in the New York Times, with a big photo of Bush and his impersonator. Form meeting content. White House reporters proved themselves the shills Colbert accused them of being, and they didn't even appear to get the irony. What despicable hypocrisy. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. Whew, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
Okay, we're back at the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm going to talk to our humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, etc., etc. It's the last half hour of the show. Once again, the number to call in is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And before we get to our guests, because we have another one on the show, it's a guest weekend, isn't it? Let's get Phyllis on. Hi, Phyllis. How you doing?
Hey, Joe.
Hi. I'm glad you can join us.
I'm just
going to get a real quick hello to you because I do want to get to our guest who has been waiting, but I just wanted to welcome you back to the show because, you know, I miss having you here in the studio, but we really didn't have room. Amber and Rusty were really kind of crying.
Amber and Rusty were great, I tell you. And I really liked your caller calling in, and the whole Republican and how they deal with sex is just an awesome chat because it's symptomatic of that bigger need to control things and to feel like they're the masters of their own universe. And the truth is, they don't really have any power.
That's right. Listen, let me get right onto this issue here because we're going to talk about this. We have a gentleman online who I happen to know very well. He's my brother-in-law. His name is Billy McLaughlin. He is the president of his local air traffic controllers union, and they are planning a big. Well, they've got a lot of issues going on, and I'm just going to have him come on and talk about them. Hi, Billy. Pull up a chair and have a cup of Joe. You there, Billy?
Here. How are you tonight, Joe?
Fine. How are you? You sound great.
We're loving your show. It's really, really good. And I got to tell you, your guests are very well spoken, and they're just, like, making the best points out of anybody I've ever heard in the media.
Well, you know, that's why we have Head On Network, man. We're conversation radio, and we speak the truth, even though people don't like to hear it sometimes.
Well, that's great. As you know, I'm the president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association at LaGuardia Airport in New York City. And just wanted to let you and some of your listeners know what's going to be happening on Monday, May 8th.
Okay, fire away.
What's going to happen is there is across the country in every metropolitan area, at every major metropolitan airport, we are going to be doing some public campaigning, some informational leafleting, and a little bit of a media blitz to let everybody know what is going on with the national airspace system in this country. Now, I've heard some comments about the Republican administration, some anti-labor efforts, and that's where we're caught in the middle. Now, as federal employees and air traffic controllers, we're responsible for the safe, efficient, and secure operation of the national airspace system. Now, I think that's very important at this time because we're in a war within the country by the very same administration who is trying to do away basically with their own employees. The FAA administrator, Marion Blakey, has declared impasse with the National Air Traffic Control Association on April 5th. We were in contract negotiations where NATCA, our organization, was looking for a voluntary agreement at the table with the FAA. The FAA had basically walked away from the table and is trying to impose some archaic work rules against us, basically, which is going to force many, many eligible air traffic controllers to retire within the next 1 to 5 years.
Now, basically, what goes on here is that when they walked away from the table, the archaic law that you're talking about is that, according to the law, by default, you guys have to accept the most recent offer. Is that correct?
That is correct. We, according to the law as it is interpreted under the FAA reauthorization legislation in 1997, after impasse, the last best offer is imposed by the FAA 60 days after they declare impasse, unless Congress intervenes or some sort of legislation is passed to avert this, which we do have legislation out there on the Senate and the House side.
And what sort of chance do you think you have? I mean, we really have a very anti-worker Congress and an anti-worker administration, don't we? With a few exceptions, of course. Who are the better politicians that you're dealing with? Who are the ones that are supporting your guys' side the most?
Actually, it's very, very bipartisan. Of course, Democrats are supporting us the most. But, again, I mean, in this day and age, with the climate and the atmosphere that's going on within the country, within the administration, and globally with this war, we're finding support across the board. And there's two bills out there, one in the House and one in the Senate. The Senate bill is the 2201 bill, which is the FAA Fair Labor Management Dispute Resolution Act, and the other one is the House Resolution Bill 4755, and they're both out there before Congress waiting to be voted upon. And what we would like people to do is to call 877-FAIR-FAA. That's 877-FAIR-FAA, or go to fairfaa.com. It'll put you in immediate contact with your representative or your senator, and it will let you know, and you can communicate how you feel on these issues to your senator or your congressman, your local representative. We're trying to give some sort of public awareness on Monday, May 8th at all the metropolitan airports to get everybody involved, to let them know what could happen to this national airspace system if the FAA is allowed to impose these work rules on the air traffic controllers who have been working so diligently since Ronald Reagan fired over 10,000 air traffic controllers. And I'm one of those rehires. I put 20 years into my job. I don't know how to do anything else because I've been working day and night, weekends, holidays, in order to keep this airspace going. And all of a sudden, they decide that somebody my age, 43 years old, is not worth it anymore, and they're trying to force us out and bring in a new school of young people at a very, very low-paying wage because of their anti-labor sentiments.
What's the worst-case scenario here? What would happen in the worst-case scenario?
Worst-case scenario is 25% of the air traffic control workforce retires within the next 1 to 5 years. The FAA has no reliable plan on backfilling those vacancies. Now, when we hire somebody into our profession, it takes 2 to 3 years just to certify that person to become a full performance level controller. During that entire time, another full performance level controller must be plugged in to every position with that person, training them until they're fully certified. So
that's a long time.
We're going to have a real decrease in the number of controllers that are working right now. So what it equates to is fewer controllers working more airplanes for longer hours and a much, much smaller margin for error.
That's and you guys are a very stressful job to begin with, aren't you?
Well, I work at LaGuardia Airport, and what many, many pilots refer to LaGuardia Airport as the center of the universe. Not because we're the biggest, not because we're the busiest, but you know what? We're right here, right over Manhattan, right in the center of the universe, very, very tight airspace, working more airplanes than the airport was ever designed to accommodate. So,
and the technology really hasn't really changed, because you know it's still about as stressful a job as it was back in the 80s when Reagan let everybody go, isn't it?
Yes, this is true. I mean, there's technology which is slow and very difficult to come by because of government procurement procedures. By the time they actually purchase, contract, and implement new technology, it's essentially outdated.
Right.
And I'll say one thing about technology. It cannot help you work more airplanes. No matter what type of software you have, you cannot work more airplanes. It's down to the human factor. And the human factor is the air traffic controllers of this country. We are the ones who guide you home. We are the ones who make hundreds of decisions per hour, thousands per week, 24 hours a day, and we need the support of the constituents of every district in America.
Well, you know, obviously anybody who flies, you know, you put your life in your hand when you go into an airplane, because you think about it, and that thing's flying 600 miles an hour, and it's got to land at a perfect. It's not easy to land an airplane. I mean, flying an airplane is easy. Landing it is very difficult, and when you have hundreds of planes coming in, you have to have somebody coordinating all of that. I can't even imagine how complicated that is.
That's correct. And it takes years of experience for people to watch the system develop over decades as it has and be the ones to pass down that knowledge to the new people. And essentially, the FAA, for some reason, thinks it's a corporation. They hired a CEO at an enormous bonus. They've restructured their entire organization, and they are essentially penalizing the most senior air traffic controllers, those with the most experience, those with the most years of service, those with the most years of dedication, and they're blaming their financial problems on us, saying that you've been in too long, and they're trying to push us out.
Well, that's a typical corporate mentality in this country. I mean, they'll pay these guys millions and millions of dollars that pretty much don't do anything, and then they'll try to make a profit by you know, cutting salaries and cutting corners on safety and other things. You know, that's just status quo. Of course, this is too big of a deal. This is not like just manufacturing widgets. This is the lives of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people across the country.
You're absolutely right. The FAA is trying to adapt corporate techniques of showing revenue by cutting salaries. And this is not the place to do it. The FAA is not a corporation. The FAA is the federal government. And I would like to remind the federal government that we are in a war right now. And you're not supposed to be cutting costs when you're spending almost $1 billion a month on a war that was a decision by someone else. If you're going to cut corners, don't cut corners in the national airspace system, because I got to tell you something, and every one of you listens right now, the very, very incident that instigated this war took place in LaGuardia's airspace. The attack on the World Trade Center was right within LaGuardia Air Traffic Controller's airspace, and I watched the entire thing happen through my people, and I saw the effects for months and years after that, and they're trying to basically punish us, where we were the ones who should be getting the most financing, the most support out of anywhere else in the government, but we're not getting it.
Well, you know something, Billy?
It's going back to the Reagan years. We're going back to the archives of Reagan, because of this administration wants to basically finish what Uncle Ronnie started.
And that would be disastrous for this country. Billy, tell you what, we're going to go on a break here in just a minute or so, okay? And when we come back, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, because I do want to talk to you about the events of 9/11, whatever you can talk about, because I know there's probably stuff you can't. But I would like to talk to you about that, because you had firsthand experience with what will happen there.
I'll be here.
Okay, well, let's take a little break then. so we can get our PSAs in and all that. And then we'll be back and talking more with Billy McLaughlin of the Air Traffic Controllers Union up at LaGuardia. This is Joe Vecchio of the Cup of Joe Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered. I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
May I help you?
Hello. Can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello. My name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope. Sorry.
Okay. Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
We're here discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a 2-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2-to-4-word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies, and we've got Phyllis here with our wings. Phyllis, you haven't had much to say about this, but I'm sure you've got some questions for our guests here pretty soon.
I will, Joe. I'm loving Billy, so let him keep talking.
Okay, well, we're speaking with Billy McLaughlin, who is of the president of the LaGuardia Airport Air Traffic Controllers Union. Billy, if you can, tell me about the events of 9/11, since you were intimately involved with what happened there. Tell us how your whole day started like that.
Well, I'll tell you, Joe, I was I worked very, very late the night before because we had much thunderstorms, and got to bed very late. The next morning, my beautiful wife, who was then my girlfriend, called me up and said, "You got to get up. It was an accident. An airplane hit the World Trade Center." And being a union representative at the time, I was just thinking it was a sightseeing plane up and down the Hudson River, and she said, "No, it's something much different." And I got up out of bed, only to find my TV wasn't working, ran across the street to my neighbor, knocked on a door, and said, actually, I think she was outside gardening, and I said, we gotta see what's on TV, something's going on, something's wrong. And I wasn't scheduled to work until late that afternoon, so my neighbor and I watched the thing start to unfold. My telephone wasn't working, I wasn't able to get in touch with anybody at the tower, and when I finally realized what was really going on, I swear it was one of the scariest things in the world, because I thought this was a nationwide coordinated attack on the United States. I feared for my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. I feared for our daughter because they lived in New York City, and I wanted them out of there. And I didn't know what to do. I sat there like everyone else and watched it on television, and I felt completely helpless because I could not get in touch with anyone. I finally went over to the New York Approach Control, which was located out here on Westbury, Long Island, to try to find out what was going on and where I was supposed to report for work that afternoon. And the place was crawling with cops and, I guess, I don't know if it was CIA, but it was government vehicles and local Nassau County police officers. I came up, showed them my badge, they let me into the guard shack, and I said, "What am I supposed to do?" The tower had been evacuated. They had to evacuate the tower and move to a remote location and start working aircraft on just basically walkie-talkies is what they started working aircraft on. And on that day, the air traffic controllers of this country safely landed about 5,000 aircraft within 2 hours without a single safety critical incident, barring those that were hijacked.
Remarkable.
The most absolutely dynamic thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I can't believe that they actually did it. There was not a single complaint. They put every airplane on the ground. That day, I was just in complete shock, and I'll tell you the truth. What I did is I got a full tank of gas because I thought it was an all-out attack across the country. After that, there wasn't anything else I could do. There was no communication in New York City. There was no television. Well, actually, I did go to my mother's house. She had an aerial on top of her roof, not a cable, but an aerial, and I was able to get a couple of television stations and to see what was going on until I finally got in touch with the FAA officials, or my employers, and all the airports, as you know, were shut down for at least days before they even issued a single departure. It was the eeriest thing in the world coming back to LaGuardia Airport, one of the busiest air traffic control facilities and airports in the country, and finding that there was no activity there. Everything was stopped. It was unbelievable. Just picture going into Times Square Station in Manhattan and seeing it empty during rush hour. It's something you can't understand. I wanted to go back to work. The only thing I wanted to go back to work, and there was really nothing to go back to except for the Ground Zero area. As you know, LaGuardia Airport is located right in New York City. We control all the airspace over Manhattan and the World Trade Center area. The only thing I could do was, the only position that was that had any activity was our radar positions going in and out of Ground Zero. And so having nothing else to do, all I requested to do was work those positions, working law enforcement, military, Coast Guard, rescue workers, anyone flying in and out of that area, just giving radar advisories in and out. It was chaotic, just working hundreds of helicopters every day with occasional fighter jets flying through the airspace. It was something I'll never forget, and it's something I still don't understand to this day.
Well, have you, as the years have gone by, have you found out any more? Are you more suspicious now of what happened back then, or are you still kind of not really sure exactly what went on?
Suspicious as far as the airspace system?
Well, as far as, you know, there's a lot of rumors about, you know, how much the administration knew beforehand, whether they allowed this thing to happen for their own political gain, or and some people, the more ridiculous stuff that they were actually complicit with it, that there were bombs inside the towers that made them fall so cleanly, which I think is a lot of garbage. But
no,
do you get the impression of anything along those lines?
No, I don't think that any administration would have any knowledge and allow it to go through. I don't think there was any conspiracy or anything like that. But I do think there was a lot of negligence on the part of the administration, where intelligence was allowed to sift through and nothing was done. I don't blame anyone in airport security. I don't blame anyone, certainly in air traffic control, because it caught everyone by surprise.
Right.
I think we learned a very, very, very costly lesson throughout the whole thing, where we were putting a big focus on intelligence. I don't really know that it's enough, because working at an airport, I can see cracks in the system. I really can. I think there should be a lot more done. I think the TSA people do the best job that they can with the resources given to them. I think that the focus is on the wrong side of the globe. I think that this administration is focusing on a war that it's not going to have any global resolution. I think all of our priorities should be put in this country right here. And one of those priorities, I believe, is the national airspace system. I don't believe you should be fighting with your own employees to try and cut back on a place where they did one of the most outstanding jobs without notice, without warning, when called upon. The air traffic controllers of this country did something that no other government agency could have possibly accomplished without warning and in the time frame that they did. And this FAA administrator has some sort of problem with her employees, and she is trying to impose work rules that would eliminate a good number of those employees and basically create irreparable damage to this system for years to come.
Well, look, that's par for the course with this administration. I mean, we're dealing with a bunch of people in government who hate the very idea of government to begin with, so their object is to sabotage it as much as possible, whether we're talking about FEMA or air traffic control. Because, you know, when Bill Clinton was in office, they had that real nasty Hurricane Andrew.